gentlemen, is called Jazz, being played by pianist Bob Mamet and his trio on a CD called London House Blues. Bob Mamet will be performing two shows, Tuesday at 8 and 10, at a place called the Jazz Showcase, which to my mind is the cultural gem not only of Chicago, not only of the Midwest, but of this entire country. It's at 809 Plymouth Court. The man who runs that joint and has run different iterations of it for more than 70 years is my guest for this entire hour. Joe Siegel, it's great to see you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
It is. He is joined by Mike Jeffers, who is a jazz drummer, publishes Chicago Jazz Magazine, and is now an impresario of the highest order because he is the publisher behind Joe's charming, fun, entertaining biography, Stay On It, A Personalized Journey of NEA Jazz Master Joe Siegel During His 70-plus Years of Musical Endeavors, Improvised Longevity. Joe, you call this thing a journal.
Well, yeah, I guess that's what it is. It's just all the advents. I tried to keep them in chronological order, but so many things were happening simultaneously. I was at the Roosevelt for 10 years.
I want to go back even further because I was, you know, we have known each other for a very long time. But at the showcase, we don't usually just sit there. I would usually be reviewing something. We don't sit there and say, hey, so what was your childhood like, Joe? The revelations and charming and, you know, sometimes not painful revelations in the book are about your background, a Depression-era child. And your writing in here is so buoyant, and at 10 years, you write, at 10 years old, I was too young to attend nightclub sets, so I was relegated to hearing music live in theaters and on radio broadcasts. That made a huge, huge impression on you.
That was in Philadelphia. That's my hometown.
Yeah. Huge impression. You grew up during the Depression. You grew up sort of with a single mom because your dad ran off with another woman. How did that affect your life, do you think? I mean, you got along with him, did you not? Because he gave you a radio.
Well, that was later on. That was...
And your bar mitzvah, he gave you, gave you a radio.
I forgave him.
Well, you did forgive him. But that first exposure to music, and the first exposure was kind of with big bands, wasn't it?
That was the big band era. There was Goodman and Shaw and Miller and Gene Krupa, Buddy Rich, all of them, Ellington, Basie.
And it kind of, I don't know if it sparks a passion. It certainly got into you in a sort of almost magical way, didn't
it?
Yeah,
well, that's what I listen to every day at home. I tune in on TV. There's a couple of stations. They have one called Swing and Singers, and they have another one called Jazz, Classic Jazz. So I switch back and forth, and I hear a lot of good stuff. I used to like singers, too, because I grew up with Sinatra. I was there when they first had the Bobby Soxer Screaming and Philly about him.
Wow.
And I was annoyed with that because I wanted to hear Ziggy Ullman and Buddy Rich.
I said, "Shut up, you
screaming.
Girl.
Yeah.
Shut up.
But I realized I was in on history, you know.
Yeah. When you look at something like that and then you see decades later the mania of the, let's say, the mania of the Beatles, let's say, was the Sinatra. Exactly. It was not even comparable, was it? The Sinatra.
No way. No. I remember I wrote something somewhere that somebody said, "Hey, man, Elvis died." I said, "Yeah, 10 years too late. Messed up music forever." Sue me.
Talking to Joe Siegel, who is the author of, and Mike Jeffers, who publishes Jazz Magazine in print. I'm sure it's online, too, because you're young and hip on print. Let me ask you, when did you been in this business about two decades, roughly, right, Mike?
Yeah.
When did you first hear of Joe Siegel?
Well, I remember I used to go down there when I was in high school. I was studying with Jake Jerger out at Oakton Community College, and I remember Jake used to have Louis Belson come out and do concerts with us.
Oh, wow.
out at Oakton Community College when I was still in high school, and I remember Louie was down at the Blackstone. So Jake got
when the
us
showcase
all in.
Was at the Blackstone.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and so Jake called Joe, and Joe set us up with his VIP thing. I'd never been in a jazz club before. I was blown away. I think it was Larry Novak and Red Holloway was playing
wow.
with him. And,
oh, yeah. yeah
and
yeah.
Larry Gray, probably on bass. Anyways, that was my first experience there. And then once that happened, I tried to go as much as I could. And he always had that Sunday matinee that I could get in until I could get in there when I was 21-ish.
Wait, do you remember, you're Joe's publisher now. That's a vaunted place to be. Do you remember when you first met Joe or talked to, other than shaking hands? Because you must have, as you were getting into the place itself, started to realize, well, there's somebody who runs this place and learn more about him.
Well, you know, I think I was shy back then.
Yeah.
I knew who he was.
Right.
I tried to walk past him. I saw Wayne a lot, and I saw him, but I didn't really talk that much until I started Chicago Jazz Magazine. So in 2003, I had a booth at the Chicago Jazz Fest, and Joe came up. No, 2002, because I just came out with the magazine. And I remember he came up, and I was at a booth, and he came up and said, "What's this?" And I'm like, "Okay."
How dare you? Yeah, who do you think you are?
The ice was broken.
Yeah, that was it, huh?
That was it, yeah, that was it.
Your admiration for him has got to be immense, if not infinite.
Well, you know, it's amazing because you know somebody from walking into the showcase and
yeah.
hearing them announce from the stage all the time, and
Which he did tonight, it was
right?
almost about an hour ago.
Yeah, and this afternoon at the matinee, too.
Yeah.
But, you know, when he asked me, I remember I walked into the Jazz Showcase, I don't know, whenever this was, 3 years ago maybe at this point, and I think that you had just talked to a couple of different publishers and nothing was moving forward and there was nothing happening. And,
right.
And just, you know, I'm walking past him, he goes, "Hey, you know anything about publishing?" And I'm like, "Well, I don't know.
I have a newspaper, yeah.
I publish a magazine every two
yeah.
months, and I've got the website, but, you know." He's like, "Well, you want to help me, you know, publish this book?" So I said, "Well, let's get together and look at it." And when I went back the next time, he came and he had about, I don't know, what, about 3 or 4 full plastic bags worth of photos and then all of this text, and that's where it started.
Well, they're amazing photos, and the text that Joe's written. I'm going to give you another example of his ability to entertain. He's talking about being born in Philadelphia, and he says, "The first thing I do remember is sitting on the kitchen table, less than 1 year old, and toppling headfirst into a bowl of hot spinach. I'm told that my father rescued me and immediately swabbed my face with butter, which probably gave me the wonderfully handsome face that has done me such good service in all the ensuing years." We will take a short break. These two gentlemen, Mike Jeffers and Joe Siegel, are going to be here for the entire hour. You can get the book at the Jazz Showcase. It's a limited first edition. I'm sure there will be more editions, but for the time being, you have to go to 806 Plymouth Court. Of course, you would know, and I wouldn't. I have dyslexia. 806 Plymouth Court, called the Jazz Showcase. Look it up online and go in there and buy a book. They're autographed, too, aren't they?
I will do that.
That will make it a rare first edition. We'll take a little break. That piano player is Bob Mamet. The drummer is very good, but he's not as good a drummer as my guest, Mike Jeffers, who's a great drummer, a publisher, an impresario. The publisher of Joe Siegel, who is 70 years plus in the business of promoting and providing the best in jazz for not only Chicago, but in many ways, for the world. I'm going to call this your biography. You call it a journal. It really is. It reads to me
there's a lot of stuff that's not in there.
a lot of stuff that could never be in one of these books.
I understand
about owning a nightclub. Yes. One of the other great things, Joe, that I didn't know, and I do feel like I've known you forever. My father would talk about you. I'd been going to the various incarnations of the Jazz Showcase since I could walk and drink. And when I used to smoke, too, when jazz clubs were smoke and drink. I didn't know how you got to Chicago. You were in the Army Air Corps and wound up in Champaign, Illinois.
Yeah, that was my last station before I was released from service. But I used to get off every other weekend.
Yeah.
So I'd grab the IC right up to Randolph.
Now, don't you think that's something of a miracle? I mean, you could have been stationed in you know, the middle of Oregon or, you know.
Yeah, that's
somewhere.
True. That's true.
I consider it something of a real miracle because when you got off that the Randolph Street Terminal, the IC line, you were in the heart of it.
Yeah, Randolph Street from Wabash all the way over to Wells Street. It was like the famous 52nd Street was in New York.
Yeah.
And
you heard many of the people. It's a great thing as a young man or woman to be exposed firsthand to your heroes, the people you had fallen in love with.
Records of, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. There's something that just does not happen. You decide to go to Roosevelt. It wasn't even Roosevelt University then.
It was
Roosevelt College.
I went on the GI Bill.
To study what? What was your intention there?
To get a free college education. I used to take social studies things. I didn't, because I was working mostly days and nights. And when you're out till 3, 4 in the morning, hearing Duke Ellington or something, you don't get to class at 8 the next morning.
Yeah, you're right. It's not the conducive for the hard studying life. You moved into the Roosevelt College Student Affairs Office. Had you lived with a black family on the South Side?
Yes, that happened. I found out years later it was part of an experiment. They sent a black student up with a white family up north.
Yeah.
And I was out south. I loved it because I was two blocks from the Savoy Ballroom in the Regal Theater.
That's right. You were at 48th and Champlain.
Right.
That too, I consider this remarkably lucky break, don't you? I mean, you could have been living downtown.
The Lord was on my side.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Because you saw these various areas of Chicago and these players at a time when someone would have had to either spend a lot of time or a lot of money to go to the various places that were like your neighborhood taverns,
A lot of the musicians that came and played for us at Roosevelt lived right around there.
Yeah.
The great bass player Richard Davis, trumpeter Paul Serrano, alto man John Jenkins, who sounded just like Charlie Parker.
Mm.
And I was in the middle of it all.
You mentioned Charlie Parker. There's probably no one who drove your career as a nightclub owner more than Parker did he?
Well, Charlie Parker, I consider him the genius of modern music.
Yeah.
That's why we have a huge picture of him on the stage. And a lot of people don't know who that is.
I know.
I said, do you know who that is? And I've heard all kind of ridiculous things like, it's Cab Calloway.
Cab Calloway?
Or it's Louis Jordan or whatever, you know.
Wow.
And I told him about it, and I said, well, it's Bird along with Dizzy Gillespie, Thelonious Monk, Max Roach, Bud Powell, all those people.
You saw Parker play.
Oh, definitely. He played twice at Roosevelt for us.
And you just you just said, "Hi, Mr. Parker, would you like to play at Roosevelt?"
No,
I mean, it had to be more complicated than that.
Well,
I'm thinking, given your life, it's like you ran into him on the bus and said, "Here, come play at my."
No. As I said before, I had a lot of part-time jobs, and one of them was working at the Beehive out in Hyde Park, 55th and Harper.
Yeah.
and Bird would come in there and play. And I was writing a column for this school paper.
One of the highlights of your book, Stay On It, which can be had autographed at the Jazz Showcase at 806 Plymouth Court. Go online, check it out, say, when will Joe be there? Go in, maybe catch a show. Tuesday night, Bob Mamet will be there for two shows, so you can get your Christmas books Tuesday night and hear Bob Mamet. He's David Mamet's younger brother. So you heard Parker play and some... Oh, you're writing. One of the highlights of this book is they reprint some of Joe's old columns, not only from his high school newspaper, but from the Torch.
They were funny.
They're very funny, and they're very good, too, I got to tell you. They're little. Here, Bird in Chicago, you right here. I don't remember exactly when I met Charlie Parker for the first time. I'm sure it was in Chicago in 1946 or 1947. Musically, of course, I'd known him before then from recordings. He played Chicago frequently. And did you get to know him on any kind of personal level?
Very vaguely. I think the only people that really knew him really intimately were the other musicians.
Yeah, yeah.
The other musicians and the other people.
He probably didn't trust nightclub owners, did he?
Well, I've been told that a lot of nightclub owners were suspicious type people.
Well, one of the things in general about nightclub owners, and one thing that makes you so distinctive and unique, is that nightclub owners traditionally have never had the best reputation. You'd agree with that, right?
Yeah, well, they had connections with other types of people.
Yes, other types of people who carried guns sometimes and did bad things to other people.
Yeah, well, at that time it was unusual to carry a gun.
Yes, that's true. That's true. But for someone in you, I think these performers over the last 70 years have found someone, and the reason you become such great friends with so many famous jazz performers is that you want to present their music. You know, no one's ever going to become a millionaire owning a jazz club, are they?
Oh, that's true. Yeah. In fact, I was very lucky. Excuse me. The great Sonny Rollins called me the other day, and we were reminiscing about the time he spent in Chicago when he was here, when he was cleaning up his persona.
Yeah.
And before he really became real famous. And we talked about things like old Seymour's record shop in back of Roosevelt College.
Yeah.
Where he played sessions and he came up to Roosevelt with Max Roach and so forth and played for us.
Well, Sonny Rollins, one of my personal...
Yeah, well, he's alive, but he can no longer play.
See, that's kind of that's sad, but what he played... That's one of the great things about recorded music. It's there forever. It is there forever.
That's right.
Like your memories, and your memories come.
There's a poem on the inside of the cover.
Johnny Frigo.
By Johnny Frigo.
Yeah.
Who was quite a poet and an artist and so forth.
Johnny, and also just a great fun guy,
oh,
too.
Oh, definitely.
Johnny was a great... I will read this poem at the very end of our hour-long interview, because it really is something special, and you put it... Right here, the name of the poem is Live Jazz, and it's very,
the whole thing, yeah.
Very moving. We are going to talk to Joe after we get some news about many of the other... there has not been a great jazz musician over the last 70 years that has not been on the stage of the Jazz Showcase. Mike Jeffers, that, for you, in a minute, that must be one of the things that you... that was punctuated for you in putting this book together. You must have at some point, as well as you know Joe and as well as you know Jazz, gone, holy Christ.
Well, I said holy Christ when I started seeing the photos. And Charlie Parker playing at Roosevelt.
Yeah.
And then Charlie Parker at the Beehive, that Joe took the pictures of Charlie up on stage with Ira Sullivan. And I think Bruz Freeman was playing drums. You know, this is all stuff that I heard about when I was coming up. But then you start seeing it, and that's why, talking about Sonny Rollins, too. I mean, the photos that he has of Sonny Rollins back in the 60s, that's just Joe and him hanging out.
I know.
And Dizzy Gillespie.
That's
incredible.
That is what really makes this book a remarkable, remarkable document. Stay on it. It is the life and times and tunes of Joe Siegel. We'll be back after the news. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago. Bob Mamet, who will be performing with his trio Tuesday night at the Jazz Showcase at 806 South Plymouth Court in the heart of the Printer's Row neighborhood, near a lot of hotels, near a lot of nice restaurants. It is the finest nightclub, not only in Chicago, but I hazard to say in the country. I know Joe Siegel, who owns and runs it, will disagree with me, but it's a great club. I've seen a lot of Jazz Showcases over the years, in the Blackstone Hotel for a long time, on Grand Avenue for a great long time. This is the best of the bunch, Joe. You had a lot of experience in Old Town, too. Old Town, where I grew up, was really a hotbed for jazz for a short time.
It was going great until we had the Dr. King riots that killed it.
60, I remember.
And because I had been doing stuff at Mother Blues and the Plug Nickel and the Old Town Gate.
Yep.
And the, there were so many clubs. They're listed in there.
Oh, I know. And also, yeah. I mean, that's kind of where Judy Roberts, who is still... She doesn't come here enough. She moved part of the time to Arizona. She used to live here all the time with her husband, Greg Fishman, the great saxophone player. Judy is a huge fan of yours. You are a huge fan of hers, too, are you not?
Yes. Whenever they come home for the summer from Arizona, the first place they play is the showcase, and then just before they go back, they do another one-nighter before they go back.
Yeah, it's one of the highlights in this town. But it also tells you something that Judy had a steady gig at the Intercontinental Hotel for many years, playing, sadly, mostly for conventioneers and sort of idiot tourists who would come in. But it says something not great. One of the things that really impresses me about this book, Joe, is to go through it. Again, the title of the book is Stay On It, and see all the places that have gone. Does that make you sad to be a survivor?
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah.
Actually, I'd like to say something about the title of the book.
You can say whatever you want.
Stay On It was written by the great Tad Dameron, and it was recorded by Dizzy Gillespie's great band in the 40s. And you see the picture of it. I'm riding a bull.
Well, yes, you
are. Because I'm a Taurus. And my grandson is the one who does, my grandson Harold is the one who designed the cover, and I hope it give him a big break because he's a fine artist.
Harold Mosley, cover art by. I see it.
And the other person that should definitely get credit is my son Wayne, who has really been carrying all the business end of the showcase for the last at least 30 years.
Wow.
And I think he started with me when I was on Rush Street.
Yeah, I think he did too when he looked like he was 11 years old. I remember that. Wayne still looks pretty young to me. Well, everybody looks young to me.
Yeah, right. Yeah. We are.
Everybody looks young to me.
And then another thing that happened was earlier tonight, a gentleman came in and said he wanted to buy four books.
Oh, great.
And I said, you want me to sign them? I said, yeah, who to? He said, well, the first one is to Tony Bennett. I said, what? He said, yeah, and the second one is to his drummer, Harold Jones, who played for me at Roosevelt.
Oh, my God.
And a guitar player, too, of course, Tony and I are both 91.
Yeah,
and he used to come into the Blackstone and sit in the back and sketch because he's an artist.
Sure, he's an artist, talented artist.
And I tried to get through to him so we could have a celebration together, but couldn't get past all the agents and
Yeah. Who was this guy who was buying the books?
Oh, I don't know. Just a customer.
Just a customer. Sign this one to Tony Bennett. Sign this one to this guy. Sign this one to this guy. You have in your life and career, and Mike Jeffers, the now publisher, but also a very talented jazz drummer and the publisher of Chicago Jazz Magazine, one of the astonishing things about Mr. Siegel here is the incredible loyalty that the people who have played that club feel toward him. And it's not just, good old Joe either. It's because of the way you've been a performer there. It's because of the way he has ever treated performers with a certain level of respect that they certainly do not get all over this country.
Well, that's absolutely true. You know, it's funny because when we first started working on the book, I mean, we would spend Geez, I don't know. We got down the last 6 months. I was seeing him once a week at least, and we were meeting over at the showcase, going through all the photos. But I remember when we first started, one of the Heath brothers. Who was it? Was it
Jimmy?
Jimmy was in town, and he comes in for his set. And I mean, and this just goes to show you, right? I mean, Jimmy's been playing for you for how long, Joe? 40, 50 years, probably.
Yeah, at
right?
least. Yeah.
And so Jimmy comes in early, like two and a half hours ahead of the set, because, you know, he's early, him and his wife. And he comes in, he's like, what are you guys doing? Well, he sat down in the green room with Joe and myself, and we're going through all these photos.
Oh,
and
what
they are
a
talking
joy.
About all of these different guys that are in these photos back from the, you know, 60s. And he's got pictures of Dexter Gordon, and then Jimmy's talking about Dexter Gordon. But it kind of shows you that these guys don't come in, play once, and then, you know, oh, man, forget it, forget the showcase. Because a lot of times, you know, and I obviously am somewhat young. I like to think so.
You're younger
least.
Than we are, right. Yeah, so live it up.
Where I haven't played a million times at bad clubs, but I have played with those club owners, and a lot of times they book you and then they split. They're home.
Yeah.
They're not even hanging out.
Yeah, it's a business.
Joe's always there for the first set at least.
Yeah.
Into the second set usually, introduces it, hangs out, talks to everybody, and he truly enjoys what he's hearing, even if he's heard the people 10, 15, 20 times. And that goes a long way, I think, to the artists. And when you look through this book with all of these different artists, these are friends, I would say. Don't you think, Joe, most of them are like your friends in addition?
I hope to consider that, yes.
Yeah.
Well, you say, Joe, at the very end, the very last line of this book, after you've thanked your grandson Harold Mosley for doing this lettering by Chicago Jazz Magazine, you say sincerely, and you call yourself a jazz junkie, if there ever was one.
Yeah,
it would be hard for me to imagine a more rewarding kind of life. I mean, nobody says to themselves, "Well, I can't wait till I'm 91," but at 91, you must look back, and the book focuses it, too, I think, on the richness of your time in the world of jazz.
Well, I hope it conveys that. That's what I meant it to do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And do you hear, I mean, when you see, you know, one of the other great things in here, and Mike and Jeff are going, man, Rick, you really read this book. It's not a hard read. It's visually stimulating. How many pictures do you know offhand?
There's over 150.
Yeah. And it's...
We could have had like 300, right, Joe?
Yeah. And the writing, he gives you insight into some of the greatest jazz performers in the history. There's a great thing here about Dexter Gordon. There's another lovely anecdote about a joke that you never got. I'm trying to find this as I plow through this. Not the best way to do a radio show, but as I plow through this, that Charlie Parker once told you, and you never really understood what the joke was, but you talk about Lester Young. And the other thing, I didn't know that Dizzy Gillespie played the national anthem at Wrigley Field. And
oh, yeah.
Who else did you get to do that?
Freddie Hubbard.
Jeez.
And who's the other trumpeter?
You had Nicholas Payton. Terrence Blanchard.
Terrence Blanchard, yeah.
And you were a fan. You, there's a chapter, a small, short chapter in the book. I'm not telling you, there aren't real chapters. There are a lot of pictures and anecdotes. And you have a lovely picture of Steve Goodman in here, because you really like Stevie. You worked at the Earl of Oldtown for a while. And Stevie, and you were just talking about Stevie and Bonnie Kolak being your two favorite performers. And they, even though they may have loved jazz and both have some jazz influence, they're basically known as folk people. But
right. But
they were not loath to cross. They fought the definitions. They were musicians, right?
That's true. That's true. Very true.
We got to take another break, and then I will finish off with Joe Siegel and his remarkable book, Stay On It, A Personalized Journey. And they put in the of NEA jazz master Joe Siegel during his 70-plus years of musical endeavors, improvised longevity. And it has been an improvised longevity based on a passion for that music called jazz. You can get the book at the Jazz Showcase, 806 Plymouth Court, right in the heart of Printer's Row. Lots of restaurants around there, lots of hotels. If you check their hours and see who's playing, my recommendation is, just because it's such a great, great nightclub, to go see a show, because Joe is always there for the shows, and he will autograph the book. You may not ask, hey, autograph this for Tony Bennett, but he'll autograph it to your grandmother if you want. And a good time to go would be this Tuesday. Bob Mamet, who you've been listening to, will be playing there with his trio. Much stuff from a new CD that's coming out. We will be back in a couple minutes. That's Bob Mamet. You can hear he and his trio this Tuesday night at Jazz Showcase, which is a great excuse. If you've never been to Jazz Showcase, Bob's a very accessible musician. He loves to play. He can sense his joy on the stage. And you can get, before they're all gone, the perfect Christmas gift for anybody. You don't have to love jazz to love this book. I'm telling you, it's a story of Chicago. It is a story of a very, very interesting man, a jazz junkie, as he calls himself, but someone who's devoted his life to the music. He grew up in Philadelphia. He wound up being stationed in Champaign-Urbana in the service and wound up coming to Chicago, and he found his dream, and he made it work, Joe. You know, it's been a nomadic kind of life. It is not easy to run any kind of business, let alone a nightclub, but you've done it. And this is a book mostly of, when you put it together, you do have to focus, don't you, and look back on your life and take the measure of it, kind of, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think about it all the time.
And you must,
I get here.
Well, and you've got a good family, and your son Wayne basically has been at your side for the last three decades of that. You've got grandkids who are incredibly talented artists here. You've got, I'm going to read a jacket quote from another guy of a certain age who is still very much, very much alive, Bobby Lewis. Throughout the years, I played many enjoyable times at the Jazz Showcase in many of its venues, even when Joe would catch a nap during my set. We have a mutual respect, I believe. Most certainly I and millions of others appreciate his lifetime dedication to presenting world-class jazz and jazz artists. Here's a really important sentence from Bobby, the guy I love. For without Joe Siegel, the Chicago jazz community would have been deprived of some of the greatest music in the world. Coda, we all know that to make $1 million in the jazz club business, you start with $2 million. One of the nice things about this town, too, Joe, is, though clubs may have been are fewer than ever, and Mike Jeffers, the publisher of this book and the publisher of Chicago Jazz Magazine, and another person who in his way is keeping jazz alive here, it's nice to have Howard Reich here. It's nice to have, for a newspaper, as newspapers cut back on everything, to have jazz covered as a regular beat, don't you think? That in other cities, you're not going to find that. And Howard is there. You probably see Howard more than you see your son.
Not really. Yeah. No, no.
But close.
Yeah.
But it's great to have, you know, someplace like the Tribune still covering the scene.
Yeah, well, when I first came here, it was not only the Trib, but it was the Sun-Times was heavy, too. With it.
Sure. And the Daily News.
And the radio. I used to come here and GN on Mike Rapchek's show.
Sure.
And who are we talking about? Leonard?
Roy Leonard.
Oh, yeah. You know, now, you know, music is just, you know, so now it's all downloadable and accessible in this. But I'm glad that Howard is still out there. He wrote a lovely and very nice piece about the book a couple of weeks ago that you can look up in the Tribune. Just Google Howard Reich and Joe Siegel and you'll find it. Mike, you're a keeper of the flame here, too. Before I do a dramatic reading of the Johnny Frigo poem, I want to ask the two of you, what's the state of jazz these days? Healthy? Beleaguered?
Depends what you call jazz.
Good point.
So many musicians spend years and years playing their horns and getting their sound so that you recognize them. And then they plug in electronically and it's gone. Could be a million different people. You don't know who it is.
Wow, that's interesting.
And that's what I don't like.
Mike?
Well, I think, you know, Joe's coming from that sound thing, which I totally agree with. But I think, you know, because I wasn't around when Rush Street, when Randolph Street and everything was going on, the way I look at it is that there are not as many clubs, obviously. And the
Correct.
Showcase is one of the premier ones. So if you can play there, it's incredible. But it's kind of moved into different smaller venues, smaller restaurants, where they're not doing the six nights a week. It's one night a week.
Yeah.
But they're successful at it. And I think we were talking before we came on the air that, you know, a lot of people think they have a conception of what jazz is. But like what you were talking about, Rick, before we came on the air, when they actually go see it, like we were talking about Bob Mamet,
yeah.
and they go see it live, all of a sudden it's like, hey, wait a minute, I actually do like jazz.
Exactly.
That's what jazz is? Oh, my
exactly.
God. You know, it's like an epiphany. So I think really getting out and seeing people play live is
See, that is, and there's such a wonderful intimacy to it, too, yep. and you can sense the passion of the performers as well. Mm-hmm. All right, here, one of the great performers, no longer with it, Johnny Frigo, was also a great poet. Here is his poem that I promised I would read. It is, and it's very meaningful, I think, and Joe can expand on it for a minute after I finish. It's called Live Jazz. Somewhere in the silent ether, orphaned by the ear, floats every note was ever played that we no longer hear. The iceberg tip of tape and disc we resurrected will is but one note in millions, drowned and ever still. True, the ink, the quill and paper genius put to use still comes alive in concert halls in reverence or abuse. But what of every masterpiece that died while being born through smoke and booze in gin mills, from piano and from horn? For every Monk or Coltrane chorus ever put to tape are millions more profound by far that made their sad escape. Those instant creatives confettied in the air, lost to all the world, save for the few who heard them there. I have rarely read anything powerful, a statement and an inducement to go hear live music as that. That sort of is
Absolutely.
The essence of why you need it, because what is happening, this is not, you know, everything, believe it or not, in this Twitter, Instagram age is being recorded. There are some things you have to be there to see and hear in person or they are gone.
The thing that bothers me really is a lot of people don't realize how difficult it is to play jazz. They just think you pick up a horn and it's blah, 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 you know. And so they don't gyrate around. And the women don't come up half-dressed and wiggle around. They think that's music. And whenever I hear that somebody is up for a Grammy, that's when I say to myself, I don't want to hear it.
Interesting. Joe Siegel, you have heard more great music than perhaps anyone who has ever been alive. I know that sounds... wait a minute.
That.
I know that sounds hyperbolic, but I'd love to argue that point with somebody. I really, really would. You have captured so much of it in Stay On It, a personalized journey of NEA jazz master Joe Siegel during his 70-plus years of musical endeavors and ongoing improvised longevity. It is written by Joe. It is published by Mike Jeffers, who is a great jazz drummer and also an impresario and also the publisher of Jazz Magazine. The cover art is by Joe's son, Harold Mosley.
Grandson.
Pardon me?
Grandson.
Grandson, that's right. That's right. I keep forgetting his grandson. So he's a prodigy. Gentlemen, I cannot thank you enough for doing this book. You can get the book, Perfect Christmas Gift, at Jazz Showcase, autographed, too. It's a limited edition right now. Probably after the first of the year, it'll be out in greater numbers. But you and Tony Bennett can both have autographed copies because Tony Bennett's getting one for Christmas.
Right.
And you can have your son, daughter, father, mother, grandmother, aunt, uncle, grandfather have the book. It is a lively, entertaining, and I think very meaningful read. Joe, it is great to see you. Mike, it is great to see you. Congratulations to both of you, and happy holidays.
Thank you, Rick. Thanks so much.
Oh, and my pleasure. This was a real joy. We've got some authors coming up, other authors, because Joe's a very good writer. Other authors coming up after the news. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.